Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets powered by FCN. I'm your host, Chris Meany. Thanks, as always, for taking the time to hang out. I appreciate you guys. You're going to be talking NFL draft. That's right. It's an NFL draft edition of Mean Streets, and I got our guy, Derek Brown of course, FCN. You're well aware of that. At Dbro underscore FFB, the co-host of Fade the Chalk, also doing some underdog fantasy streams over at our FTN YouTube page. Man, I have gotten a kick out of those streams. You and Adam Pfeiffer absolutely killing it on the podcast, killing it on the streams. The energy is high, and I love it when and don't take this the wrong way, because I don't like to see anybody get sniped, but when you guys get sniped or somebody gets sniped, I roar, man. Dbro, welcome. Thanks for taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me, Meany. This is going to be a blast, dude. No, it's that's why we put out the clips and stuff like that. Like, the pain is real, and none of this is manufactured. Like, the other day we were going for a Jacksonville stack, and then to have, of all people, Marvin Jones, because we had passed on another player who we'll probably get to in a little bit here. Missing out on Marvin Jones that late in the draft was absolutely painful. Go check my timeline, watch the video, enjoy the pain, get some laughs, man, because these streams you're talking about, man, have been a ton of fun. Adam and I, we're just stacking players. We're enjoying all the values right now, and a lot of these rookies, especially they were talking the draft today, it all fits together, man, because if you're doing best ball drafts, you're seeing values right now in rookie ADP that you will probably never see the rest of the season, man. So no, it's been awesome.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to get you on before the draft happens. Obviously, we're going to be covering a lot over at FTN throughout the draft, some articles. There's already so much content so far. I mean, we got a rookie scouting, you know, draft kit. Right now, you can jump over at FTNFantasy.com/pricing. You can get the NFL Fantasy Football Platinum 21, which just features everything, right? The prospect draft guide throughout the season. You're going to have the premium chat. You're going to have exclusive coaching sessions daily, right? From a lot of us, the ADP tool, start and sit tool, league sync, everything, plus including the draft kit, content from yourself, myself, Pfeiffer, all the bright minds over at FTN, of course, led by Jeff Ratcliffe and Brad Evans, $59.99, the early bird special. Our guy, Elliot Chris, just came out with a two-part betting the mock piece, which I thought was just fantastic. And this guy can't help himself. I got to get him on next week. He's just making bets left, right, and center, and I love it. I am all about it. And we're all in our glory here. We're just 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. So it's really why I wanted to get you on first, because I'm in tune. I'm starting to get more in tune now with the draft just a couple weeks away, but you have been killing it. You and Adam Pfeiffer over at Fade the Chalk. You've had some great guests. You guys had one of my faves in the industry, my former colleague, Emery Hunt, on the other day, breaking down some prospects. Yeah. Emery is awesome. You guys are super in tune. So I wanted to pick your brain here before we get into the draft. And of course, things will change a little bit. Guys will land in certain spots, good spots. Maybe guys we didn't like as much heading into the draft, but we love their landing spot. But been grinding here with the NHL, MLB, and NBA, so I'm just super thrilled to have you on and pick your brain with some of this stuff. But first, since we're on underdog and we talked about it and you mentioned some of those values and stuff, who are some of the guys that you've noticed, you know, that you've had shares of that maybe you wouldn't, or the value is there, and some guys that you think, as we talk through this and rookies, I'm sure some of these guys will pop up, but who are some that come to your mind that's like, oh man, I love this spot for them. This time next month, no chance you're getting them here.
There's so many different wide receivers that I can point to right now, Meany. Like, running backs, the thirst is real. Quarterbacks, your ADPs are pretty similar. I mean, I'm not going to say there's not a ton of edge. I mean, there's just not ones that are glaring right now. But as far as, like, wide receivers scattered throughout the draft that I feel like are massive values right now, and guys that you can get at various points of the draft where I feel like the ADP is just wrong. Like, you can get Michael Thomas going in the third round right now. And regardless of whatever quarterback you think is going to be on the Saints, you can head over to FTN Daily, check out my value article over there for underdog. I've got Michael Thomas listed there. I got Keenan Allen listed there.
And you might Allen again is going to get disrespected after an unbelievable season.
Every year, man, he gets disrespected. Crazy. And I get it. You might not think he's a sexy pick. In past years, you consider and talk yourself into that with Phillip Rivers. If you look at Michael Thomas, when he had Taysom under center, over a 30% target share. He's going in the freaking third round, Meanie. You have Keenan Allen, who had an elite usage rate in the third round with Justin Herbert under center. The guy was a top three wide receiver last year. I mean, it's ridiculous, man.
He was a beast in terms of targets and catches. I think he went on a run where he had at least five grabs in every game, and then the one that he didn't against the Saints, he left early with a back injury. I get maybe last year being a little hesitant on him with Taylor, and he didn't know when Herbert was going to come in. Mm-hmm. But he was going in like the fifth round in some drafts, and now six we've already seen – yeah, six. And we've already seen Herbert and how great he is, so I don't understand the disrespect again for him.
Well, it's crazy because you're getting round one type of usage from Keenan Allen. That's what we saw last year, and he's going in the third round. Once we get training camp, some of these ADPs kind of shift out. Keenan Allen and Michael Thomas, I won't be surprised if we see them creep up into the second. The other one that – and you can go check the streams. Adam and I think we have four streams that are live right now. In two of those, Meanie, we took Julio Jones – in the fourth round, which is insane to me. And I know, like, we're trying to diversify our best ball portfolios. But again, if you're seeing these egregious ADPs right now, this is what you jump on. And then when he climbs to the late second, the third round, where he should be, then you're like, I'm out, man. I'm good. Yeah. I got all my exposure in the fourth round. Y'all can have him. Pay up now. It's all good.
Yeah.
You've seen what Julio is, and he's not dust, Meanie. He's
No, he's not. He still has a lot to offer. When he was playing, he was phenomenal. This is one of my favorite times of the year to do, you know, best ball drafts and things like that to create – you find that edge. People, you know, one of my leagues, we do rookie drafts before, and another one we do after when everything is settled. But I like before. It's unique, man. It's different. You can get in there. You can. It's a bit of a guessing game, which guys are going to go where, but it does create a buying opportunity for some of these players, which we'll touch on. So make sure you check that out. You're watching here on our FTN at YouTube page. You can just circle through our videos and you can see the underdog streams. I want to give a shout out to Collectible at Collectible App on Twitter, the number one fractional investing platform for sports. You can invest in sports, iconic sports cards and memorabilia with exclusive sign-up prizes for FTN listeners. Collectible is a new app that lets any fan buy and sell real equity shares in the world's most rare and exciting sports cards collectibles. So been having some fun with that. Give them a follow on Twitter at Collectible Apps. Let's get into some of the draft. As I mentioned, there's so much content right now over at FTN, FTNFantasy.com, Daily.com, Bets.com. Bets are flying in left, right, and center. I saw Brad Evans with an article and a couple bets there as well. Let's just, you know, I won't take up too much of your time, but I wanted to talk about some of the top prospects here and get a feel on some guys that you've really taken a liking to maybe over the past couple of weeks. I know that you've been active on Twitter, a great follow, always a great follow, but active on Twitter for sure with some of the narratives. Let's talk quarterbacks. Let's right off the hop. Let's go there. We'll start strong. Trevor Lawrence, we don't really need to spend any time on him. It does seem like, I don't want to say it's a lock, but it does seem like a number one pick. Yeah, it's
Elliot put it in his bets article. You have to wager $10,000 to win 100 right now. It's a lock.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, or $10, I think it was.
And I don't suggest it, but it's going to happen. Trevor Lawrence, Jacksonville. It's exciting, right? It is exciting for a guy like DJ Chark. You talked about Jones. It's nice, right? They're going to have a capable quarterback, and DJ Chark is a guy that needs a capable quarterback. I'm going to like him this season. And then it does sound like maybe Zach Wilson at a BYU, number two. Obviously, Sam Darnold is gone. And then this is where it gets, I guess, questionable, we'll say. For me, and I'll let you talk, but I'd like Justin Fields. I think this guy is a stud. They had the second pro day. It's what is Shanahan going to do? Play to his strengths. A lot of people talk about Shanahan and what he can do with quarterbacks. I look at Shanahan when he was with Atlanta and Matt Ryan, and they lost that Super Bowl at the very end, and Ryan wasn't a mobile quarterback. And you know, there's been a lot of talk about him wanting a smart quarterback. And did they trade all the way up to get a guy like Mac Jones, who is not a mobile quarterback? He's accurate. I mean, he's very intelligent. And then you see Shanahan a couple of years ago in the Super Bowl, you know, lose at the end from a mobile quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. get him a mobile quarterback and what he can do in Fields. I think Fields is the guy at three. There's a lot of different ways that they can go here. As I mentioned, they had the second pro day, you know, having Jones and Trey Lance making different throws, seeing what they can do in a Shanahan offense. For me, I just, and I'm looking at Ratcliffe's mock draft. He has Lance at three, who I don't think is ready yet. I think he's a bit of a project, maybe a couple years. I think Fields is ready to go now. Talk to me about what you think the Niners are going to do. And what is this hate for Justin Fields?
I have no clue why every single day we get some other ridiculous narrative. And if you want to hear my entire full, just unabridged rant about all things Justin Fields, check out the podcast. I went off for like 8 minutes about it because I just got sick of all the crap, Meanie. Like every single day, it's a different narrative about Justin Fields, about what he can't do. He can't do this. He can't do that. I wish Justin Fields had the same publicist as Zach Wilson, and we heard about all the things that he can do on a daily basis. I love Justin Fields. My comp to him was 2020 Dak Prescott, a refined passer, a rusher, and I think he's actually a better rusher than Prescott too. Justin Fields can do all these different things, and for him to go to San Francisco, that's been where I've been at. I've been there, and now he's the betting favorite. If you've been following me, if you've been following all the content from FTM Bets, you would have already placed your bets on Justin Fields. And if you haven't, I'm sorry. You missed the window. He's going to go to San Francisco. That's where I sit with it. That's where I've been sitting with it. Because he's pro ready. And for all the Jimmy Garoppolo still in San Francisco, all that means is that they haven't gotten back what they wanted to as far as trades.
Right.
Like that's it. Like, they can cut Jimmy G and his contract is nothing right now. They could easily get rid of it. They want compensation back for him. So everything else you're hearing, you've been hearing, is smoke and mirrors, man. Justin Fields, if you look at, regardless of which metric you look at, meaning adjusted completion percentage, deep balls, play action, which Shanny uses a ton.
Yes.
All extremely high marks. And yes, I know Mac Jones has extremely high marks in play action. Go check the numbers. I'm not debunking any of that. But Mac Jones does not have the mobility of Justin Fields. He cannot be a franchise-changing quarterback. And for San Francisco, you go up, you make that move. And the one thing that doesn't get talked about enough, it's been discussed a little bit on social media, is that all of this move for San Francisco was made before any of this pro day crap came out. Before, oh, he's going to this pro day. Oh, he's not going to that pro day. San Francisco made the move up before any of these pro days with the idea of not, okay, we're going to take, you don't give up that much equity
right
to go up and say, there's a tier of quarterbacks and we're okay taking one of those. You make that type of aggressive move to say, this is the guy that is going to change our franchise for the next 10 years. And we're going to go up and get him. And Mac Jones isn't that dude. I'm sorry. I'm not crapping on the guy. I'm not saying that he's going to be a terrible NFL quarterback. But as far as franchise changing, he's not that. It is Justin Fields. And I know I'm burying Trey Lance here.
Talk to me about Trey Lance, because I do like him. I don't think he is – I don't think he's ready now. And San Fran is ready now to make a run, right? You look at the weapons they have, Debo and Kittle and Ayuk. They're going to get some players back on defense. They suffered some injuries last year. I think they're going to rebound there on the defensive side of the football. Talk to me about Trey Lance out of North Dakota State, because this is somebody, when I watch the film a little bit more, I do like him. I think he has a high football IQ. I think obviously he's very mobile. He can make things happen with his legs. He had over 1,000 rushing yards in 2019, 14 rushing touchdowns. But is it fair for me to say that I don't think he's ready right now to step in and be a starting quarterback? That's
absolutely fair. And we talked about this on the podcast, and the word raw is always brought up with Trey Lance. I think that I prefer to term it as inconsistent because if you look at all of his marks, if you look at passer ratings versus deep and pressured and all these different things, one, his play action marks are not high. So if you're actually looking at him for a fit for San Francisco, you're really more projecting than you are going off based off of what he did in his one full season. The other thing about Trey Lance is his marks are all really high. If you look at passer ratings on multiple different levels, that's because the guy didn't throw a freaking interception, Meany. So some of that needs to be taken into context. If you look at his completion percentages and adjusted completion percentages, they're low, man.
Very low.
And a lot of them are middle of the pack or low in this class alone. If you compare him against all quarterbacks with 50 or 100 or more dropbacks. So Trey Lance is a guy that I'm not saying that the skills are not there. I am with you that I think he needs time. I think if he were thrust into a starting role, you're going to see an offense that is predicated heavily off the run, heavily off a bootleg. They're not going to ask Trey Lance to win games and more game manage and learn on the job. And he's going to be more of a Tyrod Taylor type of fantasy quarterback, considering all of those things, if he's thrust into a starting position, which I hope that he's not, because the other thing about it, Meany, is the level of competition difference and the speed of the NFL. You hear players talk about that when they come from the freaking SEC, much less hearing it coming from he's coming from an FCS school. Right. And it's not that I don't think that the skills are there. They're there, man. But I think that the competition jump is real. Getting into the context of more of his numbers also gives me pause with Trey Lance. You know, like, I think the floor is low for him. Like, my tiers of quarterbacks right now, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence are in the same tier. They're tier one prospects for me. And if you, however you want to dice up the other three guys behind them, you could put Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Zach Wilson in the same tier, or you could drop them and subdivide that how you choose to. But the Trey Lance and these other quarterbacks are not in the same tier as Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. So I've got concerns about Trey Lance. Like, I see the floor. I see the ceiling, but the floor cannot be ignored for him.
I totally agree. It's going to be interesting to see what Atlanta does. Like, Jacksonville, Jets, San Fran. We know Cincy's not going to take a quarterback. We know Miami's not going to take a quarterback. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see, does Atlanta trade back? Do they take Pitts? Do they take maybe a project like Lance, knowing that they have Matt Ryan? You know, maybe he can just play for another year or two with some of those weapons. Like, that seems like a potential ideal spot. You know, Zach Wilson is getting those Patrick Mahomes comparisons. What are we doing with that? That's like, poor Zach Wilson to have those kind of comparisons off the hop. And what, why? I don't see it at all. I like this kid. I think he should go too. I mean, I like Fields more. I thought originally about 3 months ago, I thought that Fields would be number two. When I was watching Fields play with the games on the line under the bright lights and he was suffering the injury, I was like, okay, this dude, man, he has it. Like, he is battling right now. He's a Jet. And it just doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. Like, the Jets have their eye on Zach Wilson. And we just kind of glossed over him. Like, what do you make of Wilson?
I think people need to fade a lot of that hype. And I'm not saying the guy doesn't have the arm talent. The one thing that that's not talked about Zach Wilson is that if you look at the two previous seasons, everybody talks about the fact that he did not face pressure at BYU. That's sure. Adamantly true. You know, fourth lowest pressure rate amongst all quarterbacks, 100 more dropbacks. I mean, he's up there with Mac Jones. You can make the same conversation. Didn't face pressure. Last year in 2020, was he good versus pressure? Yes, he absolutely was. Can't fight you there. If you look at the two previous seasons, though, Meany, his marks versus pressure, and if you're talking about a guy that did not face great competition at BYU in this last season, did not face pressure in 2020, and for everybody that wants to pump up all these different things about him, the speed of the NFL game, and we're getting back into this, the speed of the NFL game is different. He's going to go to a Jets team. If he goes to the Jets, which we're projecting him to, the offensive line is not great, Meany. Like, they were one of the worst teams in the league last year in allowing pressure and allowing a high adjusted sack rate. That offensive line is not a ton better. Now, if they go out and they address it in the NFL draft, sure, you want to peg that, that's fine. But Zach Wilson in the two prior seasons before 2020 as a quarterback at BYU was terrible versus pressure. 41 passer rating, 71 passer rating. Yes, one of those seasons was marred by injury. I get that. You still can't write it off. If we're talking about the entire profile of a prospect and we're giving context about what he's good at, and everybody wants to talk about all this off-platform stuff, and they want to consistently just churn that narrative, you also have to realize that there is a floor. You might not like that floor. You might not want to shine the flashlight on that floor, but there is a floor there. That's why on the podcast, I talked about it. I was like, he easily could turn into a pumpkin. He easily could not grow as a passer at the NFL level or face struggles. He easily could be the next Mitch Trubisky. Short starting resume, high draft capital, lots of hype. A team goes up and takes him, and he doesn't pan out. He's not what they wanted. I'm not saying that the ceiling isn't there, because it's there. The guy's got raw tools. Yeah. He's got ball placement. He's got a good deep ball. He's willing to make aggressive throws. But you're looking at projecting to the next level, the speed of the NFL game versus pressure, bad offensive line. That aggressiveness could also shoot him in the foot. And you don't hear that talked about as enough for Zach Wilson. So while I like the kid, I don't put him in the same tier as Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, and there are big-time concerns there.
Yeah, I like the kid too, and I don't want to be too hard on him. I think the comparison is a little unfair. You're right. He does have the deep ball. He is very aggressive. He can make those throws. I see the upside. I see the talent. He definitely made that jump, right, from 2019 to 22. It was almost very Joe Burrow-like. I don't want to compare the two, but Burrow made that jump too. And since we're talking about Burrow, like, what do you think since he does at five? Because obviously Jamar Chase, there's that the connection and the chemistry from the historic offense that they had at LSU. He would be fun. Kyle Pitts would be fun. I'm in the mindset that they need to protect their investment. What do you think they do, and what do you think they should do?
What do I think they should do? I think they should just lock up Penei Sewell, sprint to the podium, and not think about it twice. I think that it's an easy thing. The combination of Cincinnati that I keep playing around with is that we talk about how deep this offensive line class is. So how do you want to flip that on its head? Do you want to go Jamar Chase and then you want to address the offensive line in the second round? Or do you want to go Sewell and you want to address the wide receiving core in the second round? Do you want to just take like, what combo do you like better, Meanie? Do you like Chase and said offensive lineman? Or do you like Sewell and, say, Terrace Marshall, and we stay on the LSU narrative?
Yeah, I like that.
I mean, for me, you got to protect the guy. We've already seen what happens, man. If they don't sit here and protect the guy, he's either going to keep getting beat around. He's going to start seeing ghosts. You're going to ruin your franchise quarterback that you just took a year ago. For me, if Zach Taylor wants any type of longevity or hope at that, there's only so many different things that you can sit here and do as far as scheme and getting the ball out of his hands quick enough that is going to help Joe Burrow, who is now coming off of a significant knee injury. His mobility is going to be hindered some, because that's just, it's facts. I mean, considering we're at the time that he sustained the injury as well, walking into, if he's the starter in week one, that mobility is going to be a little bit different than possibly what it is at the end of the season. So you take the offensive line. You don't think about it later. You could find wide receivers that can fit the mold that you need in the second round and in the middle rounds. We see that every single season, man. And if Zach Taylor is any semblance of the offensive mind that we hope him to be, that we, even if he's 10% Sean McVay, something along those lines, and he can scheme something, then why don't you take the wide receiver late and you lean into your abilities as a play caller?
It's all about the offensive line for me, man. It really is. You just look at the success around the NFL, and it's all about the offensive line. I look at Andrew Luck, I think, and they finally figured it out, but it was too late. Luck was gone. He retired. He took too many shots. But I remember one year they took Philip Dorsett in the first round, and I remember thinking, what in the hell did they just do? I didn't even care if Dorsett panned out.
David Carr, they ruined him in Houston.
Right.
That can happen in Cincinnati, man.
Absolutely. Protect your investment. You can find guys. Burrow is an absolute stud. He's a stud. You have two strong wide receivers already. You can find another wide receiver later on. I get it. There's depth. There's a lot of talk about finding offensive linemen in the second, third rounds. I get all that. I understand it. But Sewell is, he's a game changer, man. And he's really, really good. Yeah. And I just think that you need to protect your franchise guy, right? Because, or you're not going to see him in 10 years. You mentioned coming off the injury. He was sacked 32 times in 10 games. Like, just protect this guy, because you're seeing teams inside the division. Look at the Cleveland Browns, right? They're going to come after you. You're not going to have Joe Burrow in 10 years if you don't protect the investment. And I think it would be so fun to have him and Chase back together with T. Higgins and Boyd. Sure, Pitts, it would be electric. The offense would be great. It would be fun. But I would like to see Joe Burrow protected. And I'm sure, what do you think he would do? Because I know that would be tough for him. Like, would he pick his boy or would he pick the guy who's going to protect him? Like, I think it would be a tough call for him. I think he'd probably lean with his boy Chase.
I'd say
I'll be fine, but
yeah, I think he'd lean Chase too. And I get it, man. But for all of the reasons for Chase and stuff like that, I still do feel like we're disrespecting T. Higgins some. Yeah. Like, for everybody that talks about, okay, well, Cincinnati, because I've seen it out there, like, Cincinnati needs an alpha dog like Chase. I was like, are y'all disrespected? Did you not see what T. Higgins did last year? He basically was leading the offense when he was given the chance. I mean, that's what he was doing. And Tyler Boyd is no schmo.
No.
Like, the guy is – he's a couple thousand-word. Yeah, he's a good wide receiver.
Yeah.
You got two good wide receivers already.
Yeah.
Like, you can address the wide receiver room in the second to fourth round. You could easily do that, man, whether you wanted to go with speed, whether you want to take a shot, whether you wanted to add another tight end. You know, like, there are abilities to, like, that you can add pass catchers to this team that are going to help Burrow. But Burrow doesn't have the ability to throw the dang ball if he doesn't have time in the pocket, and you're going to throw off his internal clock if he's sitting here catching rushers, three rushers around the side every single time. Give him a franchise blind spot protector and franchise changer on the offensive line. Give him Sewell. Like, sprint to the podium. Don't think about it.
I agree. Give them all his LSU boys. I saw they just pick up Thaddeus Moss there off waivers, right? Yeah. They were together as well, Randy Moss's son. But yeah, he's not going to be fantasy relevant. But I thought it was interesting to pick him up. I pegged him as maybe somebody that, since he would pick up late in round six, I think he went to Washington late in round six or something like that last year. Okay, so enough about that. I think that they should grab Sewell as well. Just, again, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. You're a smart guy. You know what's going on. I know a lot of people want him to take Chase. It'd be fun. So speaking of Chase, let's talk about some of these wide receivers. And I have these guys all in the same tier, although Jamar Chase is what a freak, man. He looks unbelievable. 20 touchdowns in 2019, 21.2 yards per catch as a 19-year-old, obviously in that offense with Burrow and Justin Jefferson opted out in 2020. We have Devontae Smith out of Alabama, Heisman Trophy winner. Chris Brouts, speed. Size may be a concern. Well, maybe just body type, but we'll get into that potentially. And then Jalen Waddle, his teammate out of Alabama as well. I think he could be the most explosive wide receiver in the class. Broke his ankle last year, so he struggled there. But I'll just ask you about Chase. If you went to Miami at six, what would that do for you with Tua, Will Fuller there, and Devontae Parker? Would that make you like Tua a little bit more? Because if you look right now and you see rankings, Tua is a quarterback that's not going to get drafted in your standard league. He's maybe a super flex, low-end guy, but the consensus for him is right around QB24. What would that do for – what would you like Chase as a potential wide receiver three, high upside two, or is this just two on the offense? I don't know about that landing spot, man. I think it's exactly what they need, but just let's just pretend. He's Miami Dolphin. What does that do for Tua and the Dolphins?
I mean, I like Tua more than consensus already. I think adding Will Fuller adds a different dynamic. I think that them not having to lean on Devontae Parker as a true one is going to help Tua as well. Plus getting a guy that can separate, you know? So I'm already above consensus on Tua regardless, just adding Fuller. Now, if you add Chase to the mix, I don't think that it's probably the best wide receiver fit considering Tua, and Tua is good at timing routes and throwing into space. Tua is, and we saw this in his rookie season. So I wouldn't like the fit so much for Tua or for Chase because we haven't seen Tua just throw it up into contested situations. Would it be good adding another talented wide receiver, and can Chase be the one from the moment that he enters the team? Sure. There's also the ability for him to have target competition with these other two wide receivers there. So while I wouldn't love it, I wouldn't fade Chase either, because in dynasty purposes, I think you keep Chase exactly where he needs to be, and you keep him as the wide receiver one if you landed in Miami, because you're looking at Will Fuller and Devontae Parker. Devontae Parker's is not a spring chicken. He's getting older. They can get out from his contract. I think it's either this coming at this next season in 2022 or right after that. They can cut him and save against the against the cap. Will Fuller's on a one-year deal. So as far as Chase is concerned, dynasty-wise, I'd have no concerns about him landing in Miami. And I'd feel good about Tua. But as far as fit, I think they need to get him a separator. Like, I would much prefer if we saw somebody like Jalen Waddle land in Miami. Again, as high as they're drafting, I doubt that happens, or Devonta Smith. If Miami were to trade back yet again, I think that makes a lot of sense. But the fact that they traded back up, I think, you know, it kind of tells us where they want to go. I think Kyle Pitts would be very, very interesting there as well. But there's a lot of different ways. The short answer is I wouldn't move Chase any. Like, I think Chase is that guy. I think that he is that type of talented wide receiver. He could be an alpha in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I agree. He looks awesome. I think he's going to be a good fit anywhere he goes. And Miami's going to have a decision between him and Pitts potentially, right? Game changers inside that offense.
Atlanta doesn't take Pitts, man.
If Atlanta doesn't take Pitts, do you think they will?
That's the thing. That's where they talked about division and inside their front office. Sure. And I'm like, okay, between the head coach and the GM and stuff. And I'm like, okay, was it quarterback? Was it taking Kyle Pitts? Was it trading back? That's the three decision points. I was kind of like, if you're reading the tea leaves and you're trying to parse out what that possibly means for the NFL team. And I'm like, okay, it's quarterback, it's Kyle Pitts, or it's trade back. Which one of those? And I mean, I can't say that I wouldn't love Kyle Pitts in Atlanta too. So
no doubt.
We'll see, man. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, it is going to be wild. Since we're on Pitts, I don't want to take too much time here because I want to get you out of here. I know you got things to do. Pitts, from a redraft standpoint, I'd see rumblings about him going as a top five tight end, but typically we don't see these tight ends return value in their first year. Now he does seem very different. Obviously. I mean, he looks like a wide receiver. He's just, like I said, he's a game changer, but are we really going to peg him? It's like, say he's with Atlanta or he's with Miami. Are we going to peg him as a top five tight end? I know the upside seems to be there. Where are you at with that?
My whole problem with this, and I wrote this up, I have a long rookie guide on how to approach them in best ball right now up on FTN Daily. So go check that out. Discussing EDPs from a really sharp site called Grinding the Mocks, where they combine all the mock drafts, give you expected draft values and where guys go. But I talked about it, man, like Kyle Pitts, it's not that I dislike the guy. I hate his ADP right now, meaning like, it's the problem is that we're baking into his ADP that he's going to
ball out. Yeah,
he has to. And the problem that I have is that since 2017, Evan Engram is the only tight end in his rookie season to finish top five in fantasy points per game. And while I love Kyle Pitts, Evan Engram did that on the back of like basically every other receiving option on that roster dying that year.
Yeah. Odell Beckham Jr. left early that year.
Dude. Yeah. He finished with the second most targets of any rookie tight end outside of Jeremy Shockey since 1992. So you're telling me that Kyle Pitts, where are we going to peg him to walk into 120 targets?
It's not in Atlanta.
It's not going to be possibly in Miami. Like, where's that landing spot for Kyle Pitts where he walks into 120 targets? And we're saying he is getting 120 targets. A team is going to utilize him exactly right. He's not going to be asked to block a ton. He's going to be used outside. He's going to be used as a receiving weapon. We're going to assume rational coaching. All of these things are being baked into his ADP right now, meaning in the ceiling, like in FFPC drafts. He's going to the fourth round.
I'm seeing
That's crazy.
It's absurd. Yeah.
Like, even if you're talking about his ceiling outcome, if you play the median outcome for the wide receivers and other players going around his range, they're the same. And you get to play all the tight end narratives and the edge that you get. You're baking it into the ADP that he is going. It is lock, set, forget that he is going to ball out. We've got out over our skis, Meanie. Like, on Underdog, am I more willing? And we took him in a draft the other day shooting for upside. But Kyle Pitts on Underdog is going in the seventh or eighth round.
Yeah, that's fun a with far that.
Different pill. Yeah. That's a different pill to swallow than the fourth round.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, while I like Kyle Pitts as a prospect, I really, 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 really like Kyle Pitts as a prospect. I mean, I comped him as an outside wide receiver to Plaxico Burress. That was where I landed on my comps on Fade the Chalk. You know, but am I willing to pay up that much at ADP right now for a rookie tight end in a long history of production, non-production, target competition, all these things going to the NFL? No. If I'm going to make outlier bets, give me an outlier bet on Devontae Smith. I'll make that outlier bet before I'm going to sit here and pay up at ADP for the outlier bet on Kyle Pitts.
So I totally agree. I have Smith, and this is probably pretty chalky, but I have Smith in Detroit, and I have Waddle in Philly. Obviously, both of these teams need some wide receivers. Baltimore, Chicago need wide receivers. Green Bay, I think, needs one. We'll see if they get one. Houston, Indy.
They won't. They won't.
Do you have any concern with Smith? Some people will just – and it bothers me so much to hear it. He's too skinny. He's not going to last in the NFL. And that's all they say. And it's like, what? Come on. Like, that's it.
BMI Twitter remains undefeated, Meanie. That's all I can say.
What if he was in Detroit? Would you say he was in Detroit while he was in Philly? Which one would you want more? Because, I mean, the path for targets for Smith on Detroit. I mean,
I'm going Devontae. I have Devontae already ranked in my wide receiver rankings. He's a tier two wide receiver. He is my wide receiver two right now. I'm not moving off of that. There's nothing that's going to change. Like, we didn't get testing metrics out of Devontae Smith. And that's fine. You can watch him on film and say what you want for all the film grinders that say guys look fast, guys look slow. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that he meets the threshold. He's not a wide receiver. I don't care about 40 times as much for a guy like Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith is going to win in the NFL based off of his abilities with footwork and as a tactician. It is what it is, man. And I believe in his ability to do that at the NFL level. So if I'm comparing him and Jalen Waddle, I have Devontae Smith over Jalen Waddle in my rankings right now, pre-draft. If the landing spots are Philly and Detroit, still give me Devontae Smith, man. Jared Goff's not great, but we've seen Jared Goff support two wide receivers in fantasy, as crazy as that sounds. And I get that Anthony Lynn is the offensive coordinator. That's not sexy. I understand that. Who the hell is going to sit here and compete with Devontae Smith for targets? Rashad Perriman, Tyrell Williams, those are your fighters? That's the guys you're choosing? No! No, man! Devontae Smith is that guy. And he showed us, for everybody that wants to talk about Waddle going out, Devontae Smith showed us that everybody wants to talk about, okay, Devontae Smith would not have been in the Heisman, and he would not have been in the Heisman conversation if Waddle had stayed there. That I'm not going to fight you on that. Can we also talk about the Devontae Smith would have not seen, like, people knew what they were going to get on a weekly basis from Alabama after Waddle went out.
Yeah.
That was heavy doses of Devonta Smith, heavy doses of Najee Harris. That's what you got. And nobody could stop it. Nobody. Not in the national title game, not down the stretch, not in all the games after
Waddle. Video game-like numbers.
It was ridiculous, man. I want to say, like, off the top of my head, he averaged 160 or 180 yards receiving or something along those lines, almost two touchdowns per game. You don't do that if you're a scrub at 170 pounds. You don't do that. You do that in the SEC when you are that type of wide receiver.
Yeah, 1,800 yards, 23 touchdowns, 15.9 yards per catch. Yeah, absolutely.
Just filthy, man.
Filthy and ridiculous. So those would be two solid spots, I think, Detroit. And you're right about Goff. I mean, he's done it multiple years with Kupp and Woods. Those guys have been productive wide receivers. Let's go to this next tier, because I have those three in one tier, and then we'll get you out of here on just your thoughts on running back. But Rashad Bateman, Minnesota, slot outside, strong after the catch. Rondale Moore out of Purdue. Elite speed, strong 2018, injury in 2019, four games, and then just the three games last year. Obviously, a shortened season, COVID, all that stuff. Terrace Marshall Jr., who we touched on, LSU, had the historic offense in 2019 with Chase and JJ. Played outside a lot that year, and in the slot a lot last year with no Justin Jefferson. I want to say 80% of the time, at least, in the slot last season. Elijah Moore out of Ole Miss. Doesn't have that prototype NFL size, but I saw a comparison from Steve Smith, and I would agree with that. I like that comparison. Kadarius Toney out of Florida. Very entertaining with the ball in his hands, like Percy Harvin type. Out of all of these guys, who excites you the most? And I would imagine, I know we joked about Green Bay, but I would imagine Green Bay goes after one of these guys and Baltimore as well.
Oh, you're just setting me up here for a slam dunk here, Meanie. Come on, man. You're popping this up. I got to slam it home, man.
Do it. Do it.
Terrace Marshall's my guy. I've been out there talking about it. Look, I get it. People are too lazy or they're too tired at this point in the process to go get some context on the man. You're talking about if Jamar Chase is that good, if Justin Jefferson, oh, wait, we saw he was that good. Mm-hmm. Terrace Marshall was buried behind both of those guys. Still broke out, still high domino rating, still good breakout age. This last year versus Kayshon Boutte, terrible quarterback play at LSU. They rotated between three different guys that had 130 or more passing attempts. You talk about how hard it is for a wide receiver to get on the same page as one quarterback, much less three, Meanie? Like, yes, Terrace Marshall can play inside. He can play outside. He has speed. And for everybody that told me he was slow,
no.
Where y'all at now?
Yeah, I don't hear he's not chirping. Slow at all.
Where's all the chirping at? He was not slow.
No.
Terrace Marshall is going to get drafted in the first round. He's my guy. I have him in my third tier of wide receivers, considering bumping him up into my second tier with Devonta Smith and Rashad Bateman. I love him that much. The other guys that you're talking about, Meanie, like I like Elijah Moore. I'm kind of curious where his draft capital goes. I mean, his ADP right now is in the second round. He's a guy, depending on what teams think of him, I could see him go anywhere from the second to third round. I would not be immensely shocked if he slipped all the way to the fourth. I don't think that probably happens considering what he did at his combine or his pro day. But I like him. I'm a little bit lower on consensus than him, but like him and Rondell and a few of those other guys, I'm higher on Rondell Moore and Elijah Moore than I am on Kadarius Toney. I have more concerns about Toney's game and his transition to the NFL. He's a guy that really they didn't know what the heck to do with him at Florida up until this last season. I think he's more raw. I'm not saying that the physical ability is not there, but you also got other guys that the physical ability is there. Like Rondell Moore is freaking Mighty Mouse. That dude is amazing. My comp for him was Brandon Cooks, and I hope that he goes the end of the first round, top of the second round. Like, if he lands on Buffalo or New Orleans and they used him like a Brandon Cooks type of role, get him in space, let him develop as an outside wide receiver, wheels up. We're going to be talking about him for multiple weeks in DFS. So there's a lot of different guys that are falling in that tier of where their draft capital could go, Meanie. Like, if they sneak into the back end of the first round, like Terrace Marshall, Rondell, Kadarius Toney, Elijah Moore, or Rashad Bateman, they go anywhere from the back end of the first round, top of the second round. There's a lot of guys to love in that tier and where they fall, man. Like, if one of those wide receivers, and this is the reason why you need to be doing best ball drafts over an underdog, because you can build a ton of fun stacks. Like, if you go Kansas City Chiefs, and you take one of these wide receivers as a dart throw later in the draft, like you take a Terrace Marshall, you take a Kadarius Toney, you take Elijah Moore, and they land on the Chiefs, one, their ADP is going through the roof.
Yeah.
Number two, that's a fun stack and a unique one right now. If you're playing in the War Room, which is their big tournament that's live right now, you could end up with a stack that's unique at its ADP that nobody else has. So I think it's another reason why you need to be doing these drafts right now. It's just fun, man, because if you hit the landing spot right, Yahtzee, it's great.
And I think KC is going to get one of these guys. What do they pick 31st? Yes. I think they will, either of the Moores, maybe. Elijah would be a nice little fit in there for them. And I'd like the Cooks comparison to Rondell. I was thinking like a Tyler Lockett. I didn't really think about Cooks, but that is it's a nice comparison. I think that they will grab one of those wide receivers, and you're right, and giddy up. I mean, the difference in between where they're going to go now and then in 3 weeks after one of them, a member of the Chiefs, is there's no question about it. I really like Terrace Marshall. I was setting you up there. I really like this guy.
Dude, if he lands on Kansas City, I posted a crazy video of Cam Akers getting drafted the previous season. There's going to be one of Terrace Marshall. I'm just throwing it out there, man. It's going to happen. Okay,
you're going to go bananas.
Yes.
We'll get you out of here on this on the running back. So Travis Etienne, maybe he came out last year. He's coming out this year to Clemson. Three down back, there's no question, home run ability. Najee Harris, Alabama, three down back as well. Size, not as much speed, but hands. Man, this guy's got hands. Javonte Williams, North Carolina, 7.44 yards per carry, 22 total touchdowns, physical. Talk to me about those three and ideal landing spots. I got, you don't typically see a bunch of backs go in the first round, but late first, maybe like the Jets or Pitt potentially looking at a running back. What would you think about those landing spots? Like, who do you like the most out of those three? And where would you like to see them go?
So I think we could see a large range of outcomes. So if you're looking at placing some bets on running backs in the first round, I think we could see as many as two, or we could see none. I want to say the last time I looked at the over-under line was set at 1.5. So yeah, depending on where the juice lies and stuff, you want to take either side of that. I'm not going to fight you on it, because I could see either one of them, man. Like, I could see Najee Harris, and I'd like the under a little bit more because I think Najee Harris is the guy we're going to talk about getting into the first round. I think Travis Etienne probably slips to the second. I like both of them, but my tier one running backs, the two guys that I think it doesn't matter where they land, love them as prospects, love their three down ability, love what they bring to the table, is Najee Harris and Javonte Williams. And I know people think I'm throwing shade every single time I bring this up about Travis Etienne. And it's not shade at Travis Etienne. I just view him different, man. I look at him as a runway back. He needs blocking. He needs space. He's, if you're going to design him and look at him as a power back, he's not that. He's not going to be, can he carry volume for you? Yes. But I look at him as the dollar store version of Chris Johnson. And I know I said dollar store, but like really the unsexier version of Chris Johnson. If he'd have tested better, had better speed at run that 4.3 that we were all hoping for, then yes, I would be more in the Chris Johnson camp with him. I like Travis Etienne, but I think his pass game usage and his ability there gets pumped up a little bit more than it actually is as far as skill set. Najee Harris is that guy, man. Like, everybody wants to talk about, is he not explosive? Is he not the home run hitter? I don't really care if he's the home run hitter. Yeah. Because what he does do is he has the ability to garner volume. The Matt Forte comp really holds true. His ability in space with his footwork and the ability to run in traffic as well up the middle. You saw him, he's scheme agnostic, meaning there is a lot of running backs that once you get outside of these the top three guys, there's a lot of running backs that I think they're going to be massively landing spot dependent as far as I want them to land in zone schemes. We saw most of their production come from that. So they land in other schemes. Like Najee Harris to Miami would be a golden fit.
Yeah.
They have an emerging offensive line. They have a young offense. They ran a scheme that incorporated both zone and gap concepts last year. Najee Harris, for his ability, also as with the familiarity with Tua, as a check down option, easy completions, would be fantastic. I think that could happen in the first round. I think Travis Etienne and Javonte Williams probably slipped to the second, and where you want to put them as far as fit goes. I could see either one of them in Atlanta. I could see either one of them with the Jets. Pittsburgh makes a lot of sense. I would feel a lot better about Javonte Williams landing in Pittsburgh over Travis Etienne. I think Javonte Williams and his skill set and his running style fits more of what Pittsburgh wants. And Pittsburgh's offensive line is still bad. Like, unless they address it in the draft, it's still very bad. So I think Javonte Williams can make more out of nothing in Pittsburgh. I'd feel a lot better with him landing there than I would Travis Etienne.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I all of those teams, Miami is a team. I thought that they would address it last year at running back, but you know, to your point, they bolstered the offensive line. I thought they had a really good draft last year. Like, I think they're going to have a really good draft this year too.
Oh, yeah, they're going to crush it.
Yeah, they just get it. What they're doing, what they've done over the past 3 years with the trades with Houston, trading back and then back up front. Like what they've been doing is,
they're taking a page out of Dynasty Football, Chestnut man. Checkers. All they're doing. I mean, yeah, they're just – all they're doing is just acquiring equity, taking advantage of other teams being aggressive, man. Like, yes, they're playing chess when everybody else is playing checkers. It's 4D chess. Like, they're just absolutely crushing it, man.
Yeah.
You got to love to see that, too, considering what that franchise has been through in the years prior, too.
So rapid fire on the way out. If anybody's doing any rookie drafts or best balls, who's this sleeper running back that you like that's not in that top tier? You've got so many. I mean, Sermon, Ohio State, bell cow down the stretch, good vision. I get the Chris Carson comp. It certainly applies, in my opinion. Michael Carter, North Carolina, 200, maybe not a 200 catch guy, but pass catcher, change of pace. Maybe we're underselling him a little bit there. You got Kenny Gainwell out of Memphis. This guy was a high school quarterback recruited as a wide receiver. He can catch balls out of the backfield. Chuba Hubbard out of Oklahoma State, three down potential. Is there a sleeper? Maybe somebody I didn't mention. I know you're a big Sermon guy.
Yeah, you're setting me up, man. So I'm gonna dunk it home. Trey Sermon, man, he's my guy. He's the guy that I love him. I want him to go in the third round. If he goes in the third round, I want him to go to his own scheme. My fever dream would be for Atlanta to bolster all the other parts of this roster, yes, and for them to take Sermon in the third round. That's what I hope. That's what I pray for. That, or he goes to San Francisco and he competes in that backfield, man. Or the Jets, all zone schemes, all spots that I would like to see him land. I just want top three round capital behind his name. The other guy, I do like Michael Carter a good bit. I really, really do. I think that he's a guy that I don't project a high workload for him in the NFL. He has pass game chops. The thing that you love about Michael Carter, and I know everybody wants to get on their testing stuff with him, I didn't look at him as a 4.4 guy. So him running in the 4.5s, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I looked at him as a 4.5 guy. The way that Michael Carter wins is not based off of his speed, raw speed. Michael Carter wins because of lateral agility and vision and his ability to set up defenders, especially at the second level. So in saying all of that, I look at Michael Carter as a guy that we want the draft capital. Love him as a sleeper because if he goes to a good landing spot, he is a guy that I think that if he sees the field, meanie, he's going to maximize every touch that he's given and drain every yard out of those carries, out of those pass receptions. If he does that, he's going to earn himself more work. And as an efficient guy with that vision, give him 12 to 15 touches considering his body type, keep him healthy, and let's go, man. Like, I think he could be fantastic for fantasy because I think the efficiency is really what's going to get us there.
Yeah, 7.9 yards per pop and had to deal with Williams, right? So, yeah, maybe he's not a 200 carry guy, but if he's 150, I think he could be a low-end RB2. There's no question. Derek, you're phenomenal, man. I knew that you would come in here and bring it. So we're going to be talking a lot about the draft over at FTN over the next couple of weeks and even afterwards as well. Like I said, there's lots of great content over at FTNDaily.com, FTNFantasy.com, FTNBets.com. Make sure you check out Fade the Chalk. Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer are absolutely killing it. They have broken down a lot deeper, too, than what we did here today with some deeper prospects and great analysis. So give D-Bro a follow, D-Bro_FFB. Subscribe to this YouTube page. Go back and watch some of the Underdog Fantasy. Derek, thanks for taking the time. Thanks to everybody out there for watching. It is exciting times. If you have a question, maybe a favorite prop bet that you want, obviously check out FTNBets.com. But leave a comment there in the YouTube section. Circle back before the NFL draft. Just 2 weeks away. It's exciting. So from Derek, myself, Chris Meany, thanks for watching. Talk to you soon. Cheers.